In this episode of Fictional Hangover, we discuss leather aprons, bathing suits, and where lions and where to find them in Imprudence by Gail Carriger.
Hey everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult book series and authors that is full of spoilers. I'm Claire.
And I'm Amanda.
And today we're going to discuss the second installment of The Custard Protocol, Imprudence by Gail Carriger.
Standard disclaimer, if you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read or listened and don't want to be spoiled, stop listening and go read or listen to the book, then come back. If you haven't done this but want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just like the show so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up.
Cool.
Cool. I didn't find any background info.
I've got some background info.
Cool, share it.
Check out the first book, Numbnuts.
Excellent. Excellent.
No.
Well
no,
done.
I don't have any background information.
Should we
but
find
it's a series. Yeah.
Very important. Well, do you know what's a very brief thing that we can say? Mm-hmm. From her website, Gail Carriger talks about Imprudence being the second book in her Parasol Protectorate spinoff series. And she says at this time, they're going on a journey up the Nile through Egypt and Africa, which she very much wants to take herself. And I think that is fantastic. And also, she used to be an archaeologist, so that is also fun information to have.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Just and I can imagine her on the dirigible. Dirigible or dirigible?
Dirigible. 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 I think both are acceptable. I can imagine Miss Gale being a steampunk Indiana Jones style archaeologist.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know,
definitely.
Instead of the bag of sand at the temple swap, like a bumper suit.
Don't abandon Bumbersnoot.
I am not abandoning Bumbersnoot, but it'll be like a Bumbersnoot.
Okay. Fine.
Does Queen Victoria still have Bumbersnoot in...
Bumbersnoot makes an appearance.
Do we meet the Wicked Chicken? You're doing a very good job of staying silent because Discord isn't showing that you're making a sound at all.
Yes. Yeah.
I really want to get to... competence and reticence. I really do. I need to finish this series off.
Yeah. Reticence is a very good ending. I can't wait for you to read it.
I can't wait to listen to it.
Yeah. Can't wait for that.
Okay.
Okay. Right, okay. Anyway. So what are your initial thoughts?
Ooh, I was looking forward to this one. I enjoyed Prudence, but she was like a child. Like, not like childish, but she was very immature. And I was like, I was looking forward to see her grow a little bit more. I don't think we had enough time with her in Prudence. So it was going to be nice to actually just see her change.
Yeah.
Plus, just the other side characters are amazing. I need to see Spoo again.
Don't you just want to have like a Spoo in your pocket all
yeah.
the time? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. What about you? Were you looking forward to it?
I definitely was. And we talked about this in text briefly, but we both discussed how we really liked Prudence. We liked the beginning of it. We liked the first book, but it just wasn't quite there for us yet. And then this one was just, whoa.
Yeah.
So great. So while I still love the first one, you know, I wasn't quite as excited about it. I didn't love it quite as much as Parasol Protectorate. So I was a little bit worried at the beginning, but then I thought, well, it's going to be great, and I know it is, and I'm going to love it either way. So it's true, and I did, and I'm glad that we read it.
I kind of feel like Prudence and Imprudence needs to be read together, like as one big book.
Yeah.
It's like part one, part two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Should we dig into the book itself?
Let's do. After you, my friend.
Rue and the crew. It's like some 70s band, isn't it? Yes. Rue and the crew on Eurovision. Okay. Rue and the crew of the Spotted Custard have returned from India. No, they have not opened up the tea trade, as was their initial and public mission from adopted father, Lord Akeldama, but they have secured a treaty with a new species of were, the weremonkey. Yay!
Yay! Yay?
Yay? Then why is Queen Victoria so displeased, revoking Rue's sudden down of status and protections? And what were her royal protections? Anyone?
Who knows? So after her not-so-auspicious meeting with Her Majesty, Rue encounters trouble on the way home in the form of a drunken werewolf pack. Her father's werewolf pack. And they are absolutely sloshed on formaldehyde outside a gentleman's club. After stealing the form of one of her uncles, Rue gets into a bit of a growling contest with Uncle Major Channing of the Chesterfield Channings, when Robifino turns up and calms the situation down. Wait, Robifino calms the situation down? Not her father? Where is her father?
In a fuddle, rather tired and mostly naked, Rue heads to her father Dharma's house, but she's not the only person there to talk to Akeldama. Rue's mother is there. Dharma talks to Rue about reaching her majority, what that means. Losing the protection of all her parents most especially, and that lots of people want her dead. Rue assures Dharma that she can handle herself, but just in case though, he got her a ruddy big gun for her dirigible for her birthday present. Aww.
What a delightful birthday present.
Aww, he knows her so well.
He does. Primrose arrives with Virgil, very upset. It seems Percy has disappeared in an angry huff. Without his hat! Scandalous! And there may be men after him.
Mm.
Ooh, in a sexy way? Who knows? They discern that he's in his library on the ship. So, to the Spotted Custard they go. On the way, Prem mentions that she's engaged, to which Rue responds, again? Apparently, Prem often gets engaged. Rue seems to think this is funny and asks what Tosherit thinks, but Prem hasn't told her yet. I wonder why.
Mm.
Percy is angry in the library, and he's angry with Connell for some reason. Is it perhaps because of the odd tank he's had installed in engineering? And what is that for, anyway? Aggie certainly won't say. And now, on top of all of this, the ship has been boarded by strange people, and Tosherit, in lioness form, is fighting them off. Are they there for Percy? For the mysterious tank? What is going on?
I think I can see a theme coming.
Can you?
Yeah. Question marks everywhere.
Yeah, so many question marks.
The next day, Rue encounters another kerfuffle, this time between Connell and Percy. They are fighting because Connell published a paper about the weremonkeys with Mrs. F, because we can't pronounce it correctly, and without Percy. Rue talks to Connell about it, and if he's going to keep up sexy steambook sexcapades and continue on as engineer of the ship. They get a little smoochy and are interrupted by her father, Paul, who is angry at Connell, and he can't seem to control himself.
Woohoo, that is dangerous. Rue realizes that Paw is suffering from Alpha's curse, and she is devastated. That's why the pack was out of control earlier, too. She asks Prim and Percy what can help the curse. Percy decides that either it's going to be constant contact with Alexia, or going to Egypt in the realm of the Godbreaker Plague. Yikes.
Mm.
She goes to speak to her parents about it, and about Connell, their relationship, and how she knows what she's doing and won't get hurt, and about the tank he installed on the Spotted Custard. After realizing that she can also help her paw by taking his form, she does, and her parents are relieved slightly. But just then, they are alerted to a brawl between wolves and drones at the custard, so they set off.
Turns out the brawl is actually between Percy and Connell. Again. And after the brawl is over, there's another one. More important one. Robifino challenges Connell for pack leadership. Not by killing him, thank goodness, but by punching him in the face. He's the new alpha and dismisses Connell and Alexia. And Rue too. She's no longer part of the pack, which is hurtful. Cannell has devised a plan to help Connell get to Egypt in the tank that he has installed in the Spotted Custard. It turns out it is a preservation tank, the same type that used to house the body of Cannell's great aunt Beatrice LeFou when she was formerly LeFou in the Parasol Protectorate series. Connell gets in, and once submerged, Rue transforms back to her human self. Tank will keep Connell safe whilst they journey to Egypt, which they do straight away.
The journey to Egypt is fairly uneventful. Rue starts to realize she might not know her parents as she would like, and the animosity between Percy and Cannell is pretty vexing. But as they float toward their destination, the sexual steampunk sexcapade lessons have begun.
Ooh, that bloody time.
They start off with slow kissing and over the clothes exploring, but lessons move quickly and pleasurably to the full deflowering. Ooh, ooh la la.
During the journey, Alexia passes on the parasol to Rue and inducts both Rue and Primrose into the Parasol Protectorate, inheriting the other operatives, Biffy.
Ooh, Biffy.
Contacts, including the Wicker Chicken.
No, the Wicker Chicken! Who could that be?
And most importantly, the accessories.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Those hideous parasols. Yeah. So awful.
I kind of want one, though.
I know, me too.
They will now be known by their code names. Primrose will be the Ledger, and Rue will be Hot Cross Bun.
I thought they were supposed to be accessories.
They were, but, you know, new generations and all that shit.
And Rue does say that a hot cross bun is a perfect accessory, so I guess it's fine.
It's an accessory to an afternoon tea, I suppose.
When they reach Cairo and have passed through the quarantine procedure, it is time to say goodbye, for now, to Alexia and Connell. While some of the crew have left the ship to explore, it falls under attack again. They are in Godbreaker Plague lands, so there is no supernatural aid from Tasherit, but she can command the Decklings as if they were an army to repel the attackers. Rue does not know why they are being attacked. Could it be for the preservation tank? But they find out that Percy is trying to publish a paper on the discovery of a new were. Not the were monkeys, but the were lions. Rue is angry. She kept their existence a secret from Queen Victoria, and Percy has written a paper about them. Could the attacks be for Tasherit?
Ooh.
So many questions.
As Percy is thick-headed when it comes to common sense, they must journey from Cairo to the were lion lands to warn them of Percy's outing their existence. Can't have them being turned into slaves and subjected to the genteel British colonialism. Yeah, tongue in cheek on that one. Before they puff off, Cannell floats back to the Spotted Custard by means of a hot air balloon. He has brought two nomadic drifters with him, a young woman we have already met in Malta, Anitra, and her adopted grandfather, who was revealed to be Flute. I know, it's Alexia's one-time butler and former valet to her grandfather, Alessandro Tarabotti. Oh my god, it's Flute, he's back!
I'm so excited for Flute, I love Flute so much.
He parted ways from Alexia after events of 20 years ago, but won't go into detail. Now aged, but still useful, he wants to help Rue. With Flute's huge flotilla of hot air balloons and dirigibles, with the balloons painted red with black spots, they head south to the source of the Nile.
They are being followed, of course. And to throw the followers off, and since the other dirigibles are conveniently painted to look just like the custard, Rue asks for assistance and invites the captains of the other ships on board. After bartering most of their sugar and a lot of Prim's accessories away, they are still not quite ready to assist. Then, Footnote, of all people, because yes, cats are people, marches up into the center of things and turns the tides. They all agree to help. And of course, trouble ensues quickly. They are attacked again.
Shock. Oh my god.
I can't see that one happening. So they attack back with the Gatling gun. Flute ticks off a number of people that could be following them and why. It's likely either the Templars or the Order of the Brass Octopus. We also know who wanted the tank put on the ship and what or who it was for. Lord Akeldama means to keep Flute around for as long as possible. Does he know something? Is Flute going to die? Does he have more work to do? Who can say with Dama? We also find out that Rue loves Kanel. But it's not because she told him.
Oh.
She was talking about it. Ugh. Ugh. Come on, Rue. It's terrible. Just slap her. Just get it over with.
Low coal and water supplies forces them to stop at a dodgy town. During the extortionate finagling, the sellers attempt to rob them, and guess what?
What?
They're attacked again!
Really?
I know. And this time, Kanel gets shot, and does Rue. Yeah.
You.
Luckily, they are out of the plague zone, and Rue can steal lioness form to heal herself. But what about Kanel? His shot was in the shoulder, through and through. So really, he'll be all right. But seriously, what the hell do these guys want? Nobody knows.
Nobody knows! Nobody knows.
The invaders are dealt with by Tasherit kicking butt and Spoo's eagerness with the Gatling gun. And once again, water.
As they float, Rue learns a little of her family history from Flute, but finds she talks to him more than the other way around. She can understand why Dama sees him as an invaluable fount of information. Prim and Tasherit's relationship starts to simmer, though Prim doesn't seem to want to acknowledge it, as Tasherit acts like the cat that has the cream. She should just get over herself. Come on, Prim.
She's just living in denial.
Bless. We just want to shake her. I do, anyway. To another slap.
Oh, hit them over the head with a parasol.
Yes. They need to be bludgeoned.
Completely. Bludgeon some sense into them. Oh, I need that on a t-shirt. Okay. They reach the Werelion lands. Tasherit leaps in Werelion form down to the man-made island on the Nile. When she returns, she takes Rue and Prim down with her. They speak to the head Werelioness, who refers to her previous relationship with Tasherit, as Tasherit makes a point of saying she has moved on, referring to Prim. And Rue takes on the form of the head lioness, voluntarily.
Yes.
And remains so as they reboard the custard, where they are attacked again!
No! Oh my God. No!
At this point, it's not shocking.
No, it's not. It's not shocking anymore. During the attack, Spoo happily mans the Gatling gun. Tasherit and Rue use tooth and claw, and the Tunstall siblings use the LeFou inventions to knock out the attackers. Unfortunately, Flute is shot during the chaos and is taken down below decks by Anitra. Turns out, the attackers don't want the preservation tank. They don't want Percy. They don't want the Werelions. They want Rue! What?
Oh my god.
And to top off this revelation, the attacker is her Italian cousin with a sundowner weapon. Twist! Shock! All of it! Her cousin is subdued by the tranquilizer darts from the parasol of many colors and is taken prisoner. Unfortunately, Flute passes away. But he turns ghost and volunteers that his body be put in the preservation tank to help keep him around. Because he wants to keep helping Rue. Because of course he does. Because it's Flute. Formerly Flute is now the resident ghost of the Spotted Custard.
Unfortunately, during the harrowing battle, they take a shot to the balloon and now require helium. But where will they get it? Don't worry. The Werelioness's island is made of it, obviously, and they are willing to share. Yay! Afterward, when everything is back up and running again, Rue and Kanel profess undying love for each other And now they are getting married. Hooray!
Hooray! Yay! Hooray!
With nothing pressing, back in all Blighty, it's off to adventure.
Oh, I wonder where they're going to go next.
You know. You've read the series.
I do know.
I haven't yet. I'm reading along with the dear listeners.
So excited. So excited. Yay.
It was, okay, it was a good book, this one. It was.
Was a very good book. Hello, I'm back. I've just coughed up my guts.
How many lungs have you got left?
None. Negative eight.
I have to get down to the Myot market.
I know. Okay, so we love this book. We love it.
I do.
But what's your favorite part?
Oh, I've got so many.
And me too.
You know, the thing is I guess we're going through the summary. I love this bit. And we haven't mentioned this bit, but it was really, really good. And I really like that. So I'm just going to list things off.
Okay, I like it. Go.
So, main ones. Ready? No. I'll go through the main ones, though. Passing of the Parasol to Ruin Prim by Alexia. And then both girls realising that there was much more to their parents than they appreciated or realised.
Mm-hmm.
That was like, oh! And for the fact that Alexia is a metanatural, she doesn't have the same emotional connection to things. It was like the most maternal she's ever been. And I was like, oh, I loved it. I love that little.
Mm-hmm.
But also, rattling off, the Wicked Chicken reference. For those yes. who don't know it, it's the Finishing School series.
Yes.
Yes.
The main character from Finishing School.
Yes. Sophronia.
Brief appearance. Yes. Oh, Sophronia.
Oh, I'd love to. You do want to know what happens to these guys. Amazing. Anyway, Prim and Tasharit's flirting, not flirting, especially when Prim was covered in the kippers and Tasharit's like, yeah.
Oh, and I love, and she's like, I can't remember exactly how it's mentioned, but she's talking about going to eat breakfast and they're like, oh, are you talking about the kippers or are you talking about Prim?
It's just kind of like a raised eyebrow.
Yes.
Rue with her parents in the port parlor when she goes to confront them about the Alpha Curse and taking them to Egypt, and Alexia's like, I want to let go of his hand, I'm sick, oh my god, it's too much. And he's like, like complete caveman. And then there's like Alexia's like, yeah, go for Canel, you know, experiment a little bit. You need to have your sexual steampunk six gibbing lessons. And Connor's like, I don't want to hear this. This is my little girl. I don't want to hear this. It was just hilariously awkward and cringy, and it was perfect, and I loved it. Yeah. Ooh, and turning Tasharit's room into a giant cat scratching post heaven.
So brilliant.
It was just so funny. And we haven't mentioned the bathing scene.
No, we didn't mention the bathing scene. And we also didn't mention the leather apron.
No, I think we need to incorporate these because they will be mentioned later on as well.
Yes, they will.
I'm just going to throw those one out. You can catch it.
You're going to make me catch it and you're going to make me talk?
Yeah.
Or, I don't know.
We'll see. We might get that later as well.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. Although I do enjoy the bathing scene.
That was so good.
So I guess I will have to talk about it a little bit.
There we go.
So, but I really did like all of the flirtations between Rue and Canel.
Mm.
And especially that Canel has given Rue a copy of the Kama Sutra and expects her to read it.
Here's your homework. If you've got any questions, I want a 2,000 word essay by the end of the week.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
So that was fantastic. But there's a lot of flirtatious scenes between them, and about like Rue picking out dresses that she knows that Canel will like, and, you know, putting on way too much makeup sometimes because she knows that Canel likes it. But then that brings us to the leather apron, because she talks about how she dresses up for Canel and she wonders if he will dress up for her And she wants him to wear only his leather apron from when he's working down with the boilers.
And possibly and some soot smudges.
Possibly a little bit of sootiness. But I love that. And he's like, what? You wouldn't let that? Ooh.
Do you know what, though? So, it's about time that the woman was like, you know what? You've got your fantasy dress-up costume thing. I'll do it. It's fine. I'm happy to do it.
Yeah.
No, I've got a few I would like, you know.
Yeah. I'd really like to see you only wearing a leather apron.
Yeah. And he liked that idea.
Oh, he did. Bless him. He's so cute. I did also really like that they kept getting into fights with people. They kept being attacked over and over and over again. It became funny.
It was slapstick.
Because they were attacked so many times and no one knows why. It's just so funny.
Yeah. It was like some kind of slapstick comedy where it just goes on one too many times where it's like, oh, this is too much now. And then it goes on again and it's like, actually, it is still really funny.
Yeah. I also really liked Alexia's no-nonsense discussion on the precautionary measures that Rue needs to take, and just like, you know, rinse the cavity with vinegar, and here's this little hat thing that you need to wear, or that's what Rue says about it later, but it's just so funny. Can you imagine Alexia having that conversation?
No.
I love that she just sits down at the table and she's like, all right, time to discuss precautionary measures. And then Rue's like, no.
As awkward as that is, because, you know, it's your mother. You know, if Alexia was to go around schools these days and give the talk, then, you know, teen pregnancy would lower.
I think it would, especially if she, like, brandishes her parasol at them.
Yeah, and she starts firing contraception at them.
Yes.
Purpose-built parasol of many colours.
Oh man.
That's funny.
Oh my gosh, there's another scene that we didn't even talk about during the summary. The that time that they had to pretend to be American.
American!
Is this
how you all talk?
No!
Y'all talk with y'all?
No!
No,
we don't talk like that.
How does a Southern Belle go? She went all Southern Belle, didn't she?
She did. She did go Southern Belle a little bit.
Oh, Matt, I am Southern. I don't know. that's my revenge for Dick Van Dyke. There you go.
Oh, very good. It was very good.
Oh, but then she did the Cockney.
Yeah, for some reason they're like, yeah, if you can, use a Cockney accent, because they won't be able, like, they don't understand what you're saying anyway, and they won't be able to tell.
Which is proper Dick Van Dyke.
Right, it's so bad. That was so bad, but it was so funny.
Oi, what you doing on board my ship?
And I like that Canal was just like, what are you saying? What is happening right now? And then Spoo tells her, like, you don't need to go on the stage. I'm sorry to say this to you, but you're terrible.
Spoo is that breath of fresh air, that... or that, like, hit of reality that everybody needs.
Yeah. I love that she's always in the background listening. And so even though she's not supposed to be around, she's not supposed to know what's going on, Rue will just, like, kind of turn her head to the side and say something a little bit louder. And Spoo's like, oh, got it, Lady Captain. I'm on it, Lady Captain.
Yes, Lady Captain.
Whoa, that's me, Spoo.
And most of them still think, well... At least does Virgil still think that Spoo's a boy?
I know that Alexia does.
Yeah.
I don't know if Virgil does.
Because
maybe Virgil's figured it out by now.
You would think, because they're said to be best friends on the custard.
Yeah.
You kind of think, have you figured that out? Oh, I don't. Bear in mind, I haven't read Competence or Reticence yet, but I would love, if there isn't anything resolved with Spoo and Virgil, for them to have their own little spin-off story.
Wouldn't that be really cute?
That would be adorable.
I would love to read, like, that.
The Adventures of Spoo and Virgil. I don't know. But yeah, I think just a little spin-off story would be absolutely...
I would really like to hear that. Do you know what was my least favorite part about them pretending to be American, though?
the accent. No, the accents
were great. It was that they had to cut up Percy's bathing suit.
Oh, yes! And that was the American flag.
Yes, they made the American flag with Percy's red and white striped bathing suit. And it was so sad because he was wearing it with his little top hat when they stopped to fill up with water. They all got out to go swimming. And he's just paddling around in his little bathing suit with his little top hat on. And Virgil's like, "You're not supposed to wear your top hat now. What are you thinking?"
Oh, Virgil is so hard done by, honestly. It's like, and this time it was Percy's fault that, like, the public scandal of wearing, or not, in this case, not wearing a hat out in public. You can't have Ivy Tunstall as your mother and not abide by her hat etiquette. It's just not on.
I'm really surprised that they don't just all have, like, straps with their hats, and they just all strap a hat on, and they're on all time, 24/7.
Oh, a little bit like Niall in Finishing School when he's always got his hat on, no matter if he's human or where.
And that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, and Rue in the first one, she kept her hat on when she transformed.
Yeah.
At one point. Just keep your hat on all the time.
She knows the etiquette. She had that. She does. She had that thing securely up or strapped on.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So I barely
keep my witch's hat on last week. I had a hairband.
Yeah. So I just said my least favorite part of one of my favorite parts.
Well, it wasn't like the least favorite part of your favorite. It was like, oh no. Because then you don't get to see Percy in his bathing costume again.
No, and I might like to see that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know what really done my head in? And I'm not going to say it's least favourite or anything like that. Just, she did my head in, and it was Aggie. And I know I said last time that I actually quite liked Aggie's brashness. But she just got on me wick this time. Because, right, Aggie is lower class. She is a greaser in a boiler. She should not be talking to Rue. That is, you know, Rue is so far above her. Okay, she's not aristocracy, but she's gentry.
Mm-hmm.
She shouldn't be talking to her. And I can understand Aggie's feelings of injustice. The fact that her situation is so probation comparison to, like, you know, upbringing and everything comparison to Rue, who had, you know, Lord Akeldama and all of his wealth and everything, all the vampire court, and Connell with all of the trappings of being the Alpha Ware's daughter, and, you know, nobody's going to mess with Alexia's daughter either. But she shouldn't be talking to a boss like that.
No.
Rue can just turn around and say, "No, I'm going to leave you at the next port. You are fired. You will not have pay. You will have no reference. You are gone. Goodbye." And it's just, I just didn't get where Aggie thought she had, not necessarily the right, but I don't know, for the time, it didn't ring true.
No.
And I was like,
no, it definitely didn't.
I don't know. I think it's part of the whole, do I dare say the phrase historical accuracy? But then I kind of think I would never say that to the CEO of my old job. You know, I would never, I would be like, no, I disagree with a lot of what you're saying, but I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah, you wouldn't do that, no matter who or when you are. You shouldn't talk to your boss like that.
Yeah.
She makes me so angry. I just, the whole time, just fume at her.
It's like a difficult pill to swallow, isn't she?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. But then, you know, she comes up with her crossbow and helps out quite a bit during one of their many, many, many skirmishes.
I quite like the one she's talking to Tashwith, though, and Tashwith's like, they've got the fear of taxidermy.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Do you know what I don't like?
What?
I don't like how single-minded Percy was.
Oh.
Because, like, how could he not have realized that him publishing that paper about the werelions would, I mean, it would upset Tasherit, but it would also, like, actually physically endanger her. So how could he not realize that? And, like, what if there are other werelions? You know that that's going to be terrible. How could you do it? How could you do that? It made me really mad.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. Why would Cannell and Mrs. F publish that paper without Percy as well?
Well,
I mean, I can totally understand Mrs. F. It was hers. Yeah. It was her find.
But Cannell did say that he thought that Percy would have published something as well.
I'm
like through
sorry.
A different
no.
I'm just trying to stand up for Cannell.
Cannell, that's funny because he's only wearing a leather. No, Cannell. For me, Cannell said that to try and assuage Rue, who was having a go at him, and he thought it's a loophole. And I think even she was like, I'm not buying what you're trying to serve. No.
Yeah.
No.
But come on. I love Cannell. Let me stand up for Cannell, please.
No, but then I mean, if you want to defend Percy, which I don't defend either Cannell or Percy in this because I think they were both wrong, you know, Percy never did say it, and he never agreed with Tasherit that he would keep the werelion. No, nothing was, you know, there wasn't, as far as we're aware, a meeting in the stateroom where they all said, right, okay, so where monkey, somebody's going to publish a paper on it. Everybody good with that? Yeah, great. We've got this alliance now. Okay, I'm going to go and see Queen Victoria, and I'm going to have a word with her about the treaty, but I'm not going to mention the werelions. You know,
yeah.
I can kind of see where Percy is coming from. So you can play devil's advocate both ways, really.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
I still love Cannell, though. Can I just love him, please?
Yes. No, yes, go for it.
Let me love him.
You love him.
He's so
naked.
Just head up. Yes. He's so in love with Rue, and she doesn't even realize it, and she thinks that he's just so flirtatious and that she's not even really worthy of him. And then Prim's like, you need to realize that you are, that you do have worth, that you are worthy. Mm. But I just love Cannell because he really is. He's just so in love.
Do you think because what, there's a 12 year difference?
Yeah.
So he's what, 32, 33-ish?
Yeah.
She's grown up with him being a terrible flirt. She's probably seen him with people, not obviously not, you know, naked or anything, but she'll have certainly seen him in heavy flirtation. She's not going to know how serious, and at the same time, has he actually told her he is deadly serious about this relationship? And, you know, they haven't sat down and had a conversation.
Yeah, and every conversation that they do have is so, like, flirtatious and jokey. You know, you don't really know. You don't really know if he's telling the truth when he does say, like, that he's going to stick around, that he's always going to be there. She doesn't really take him at his word. But he is saying it in, maybe not in the right manner.
No, and you've got to remember as well that when they were in India, a telegram and ran off. No buy, no leave, no explanation. And maybe he should have said, actually, I've got to go to Egypt, I've got to go do X, Y, Z. I'll meet you back in Britain.
But that would have been...
Something like that would have been a bit more, you know, it would have added some foundation to the relationship. And it certainly would have added trust. And I think that's part of what, yes, I think Rue, you know, needs a confidence boost in that regard.
Yeah.
But she also needs to trust him.
Yeah.
And I think Primrose did a fantastic job with Rue. I just think Primrose is amazing. She's like my favourite character in this book.
She's just so supportive. Oh, she's really great.
She is the bestest of best friends. It's like, oh, so Prim, love, can you go and sort out the kitchen and make sure we've got supplies for X, Y, and Z? Yeah, it's fine. Oh, can you look after the finances of the ship? Yeah, it's fine. Can you go and help with negotiations to get helium or whatever? Yeah, it's fine. And do you mind if we give away all your accessories? Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, they're going to be out of fashion anyway.
Yeah, yeah. She's just so down to earth.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, she really came into her own. And she was a background character in the first installment, but she absolutely shined in this one for me. Like, she was necessary. If you didn't have Prim in the story, they wouldn't have gotten past Cairo at all. She needed to be there. So it was nice to see when the induction in Russell Protectorate took place, Prim was very much tied in with that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Alexia didn't show any, I mean, she wouldn't Alexia, but she didn't have any preference towards the group. And then they did the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yes.
And it was just lovely. And I just, honestly, I love Prim. And she needs to realise that her emotions and desires aren't in the quote unquote traditional sense.
Just wait for competence. Yeah. Just wait.
You can see she is hot for Tasharit. And
oh yeah.
Honestly, she needs to give in to it. And do you not think it was odd given, and I think Rube comments on it, that in her background, raised amongst vampires, knowing the werewolf pack, knowing Dharma, you know, the LGBTQ community is not an unknown thing to her. And it never really is treated as that much of a taboo subject within Miss Gale's books. Because it's not.
It's just like a non-issue. It's just not a thing. You just go right along with it and it's fine.
Yeah.
Ugh. If only the real world were like that.
Oh, God, it would be lovely, wouldn't
it? It would be.
Nicer place.
Yeah. But you just have to wait. Just wait for the next couple of books. I think you will love Prim even more, but you will also maybe love Gail Carriger even more.
Is that possible?
Yes.
I honestly feel like she came over to Britain during the Reticence book tour, and she didn't come to any of the towns that I could get to, unfortunately, because I was stalking her on social media. And I'm like, yeah, if you come over here again, I'm going to find you.
Yeah.
Not in a creepy way. I did.
No, not in a creepy way.
You met Miss Gill, though, haven't you?
I have. I have met her, and I am featured on her website.
Ooh, fancy.
I know. It makes me very happy. I don't want her to ever change that picture on her cosplay page. Because it's a very good picture. It's me, and I'm there, and I'm dressed as a pickleman, and I have my bumbersnoot, and she's like pointing with her mouth wide open at the bumbersnoot. It is such a good picture.
It is.
Yeah. And she's very delightful.
She seems.
Oh, and hey, do you remember that finishing school episode? She was on the show.
You know,
she's here.
You know that finishing school episode? That was what brought me here.
I know.
So she's got a lot to answer for, really.
Yeah, she really does.
Sorry, listeners.
Yeah. So. No. We should be thanking her. Don't apologize to them.
I would probably fangirl out with if I ever. I would just be like, yeah, I can't talk to you, plus it's you.
Well,
anyway.
You know, hopefully we can get her on again.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. That would be such a surprise, wouldn't it?
Oh, message. Claire, you need to do a recording at this time. Okay, fine. Right, okay, I'm just going to get over my little fantasy.
Yeah.
So does anything in the book stand out and make you go, ooh, or ah, or yay?
Ooh, ah, ooh, ah. I was really shocked that it was Rue that they were all after the whole time.
Ooh,
even though Dama did warn her at the very, very beginning, like, people are going to want you dead now that you have come to your majority. And she's like, oh, it's fine. I'll be fine.
Yeah, but that's a very broad statement, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not an explicit warning. It's like, okay, so you've lost the protection of the vampires, you've lost the protection of the werewolves, and you've lost the protection of the queen. Sucks to be you. You're out. You're going to be, you know, public enemy number one or whatever. No, a little bit more context would be helpful.
Yeah, it would have been. Would have been. But yeah, that's what was shocking to me. What about you?
I agree. That was a really, really good twist. But I enjoyed meeting Flute again. I didn't think I would meet Flute again, you know, after the Parasol Protectorate series, and he gets left in Egypt. You're like, okay, he's done. I mean, he must have been fairly old at that stage, because he was valet to Alessandro Tarabotti. And then butler to Alexia for at least 25 years.
Yeah.
I don't know how.
And they also mention him in finishing school.
Yes, he's at the dinner party at Dharma's house.
Yep.
So it's kind of like, I placed him around roundabout, actually, about in his 90s.
Yeah.
But it was nice to see him, and it was nice to he's a very calming presence, and it was nice to have that little element in the book. Really,
yeah,
it's really nice. But what I will say is, it's not a surprise so much, but something that definitely stood out for me was Miss Gale not shying away from the brutish nature of colonialism.
Mm.
So I will admit, and for any of our British listeners out there, please correct me if I'm wrong for your education, never taught it at school at all. So
you're never taught the terrible things.
No, we would talk like, you know, Victorian industrialism. We did Egypt. That was great. And, you know, the both world wars. But the colonialism, the colonial takeover was talked to us to a point, but was very sensitized. And it was kind of like, you know, the history is written by the victors style of education. None of the brutish nature. And I think even then there's, you know, okay, it wasn't the dirty level, but she certainly didn't shy away from saying, actually, it isn't all genteel colonialism, it isn't all, you know, enlightenment, it was brutish, there was slavery, there was, you know, a lot involved that was bad. And I'm glad that she included that, because it's truth.
Yeah.
And it's down to me, my education, to go out and enlighten myself on those subject matters.
All right, that was a little deep.
It was. Should we lighten things up now?
We should, because it's time.
It's time.
It's time for Would You Rather. This week was very special.
I love this week's Would You Rather.
Because there was two of them that we asked on social media this
week. Not just the fact that there's two, I think it was absolutely golden.
Yeah. We had some very good questions and we had some very good comments this time. But our questions were good too. Come on.
Well, after the last episode, we needed to lighten things up.
We did, because yikes.
Yeah.
So, first question that we asked, this was a question for everyone, because not everyone has read all of Miss Gale's books yet. So we asked a very general question to everyone. Would you... I just now read what you said was the question. I only just now read it. Who's your daddy? Vampire or werewolf? That is not the question that we asked on social media.
I was just not taking my... We were spitballing the questions. I just thought I'd write down the notes.
Would you rather have a vampire or a werewolf as your parent? And or who's your daddy?
That's a totally different answer.
That's so good. On Facebook, 54% of you would rather have a werewolf parent, and 46% would prefer a vampire parent. And on Instagram, 73% would prefer a werewolf parent, and 27% would prefer a vampire parent. And what about Twitter?
So our Twitter, at fictional hangover, no ER, we had 110 votes. You have no idea how excited I was to see that number go up. I'm like...
I don't even understand it, because last week we had 3.
Yeah. Wow. I'm going to put it down to Miss Gale retweeting and her fan
base. Oh, definitely.
And the Parasolverse fan base is sublime.
Yes. Yeah. They're all top-notch people. Everything about them is fantastic. And they really... Yeah. They really have a lot to say.
Yeah, and it's all gold. So on Twitter, yes, the 110 votes, I might just repeat that.
Just how many votes was it?
110.
Oh, yes, that's right.
110.
Excellent.
64% said werewolf and 36% said vampire.
Wow. We have any good comments on Twitter?
Yes, we had comments as well. I'm beyond excited.
It's fantastic.
It is. At Creative Reader 3 on Twitter says, less chance that a vampire would soil the floor. Poo emoji.
Oh my gosh.
Can't deny that one. Gosh.
What else? What else on Twitter?
At JJ_S Cup on Twitter says, I'm just not very tidy and would upset most vampires.
Oh, Heather on Facebook said, I think mine is a vampire already. Sleeps all day, needs liquids to survive, coffee, hates sunlight, and there are no religious items in our house. Also, no mirrors. I am suspicious now. Oh, no. Poor Heather. Take care of yourself, Heather. You have a vampire out there after you. Yikes.
Did we have any?
We also had a comment. We had a comment on Instagram, too. It's excellent. Ooh, everyone is engaging with us this time. Communist Chicken on Instagram says, werewolf, if I need to get my mom blood every day, I'll probably forget and she'll die.
Oh my god.
It's terrible. Oh,
do you know, at least people can understand the basic necessities, you know?
Oh my gosh.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
So what do you say?
Oh, I forgot you were gonna ask me that. I'm going to go with the obvious one. I'll probably guess werewolf. Yeah, because then I can have a dog without having a dog.
Yay!
Wolf back rides, brilliant. And I could just imagine them giving the best hugs. And I love a good hug.
Yeah.
Also, I wouldn't be living in permanent fear of being a snack, because it just takes that one moment when you're a teenager vampire parent to turn around and go, Sicky, come here.
Yeah.
I think I know which way you're going to go.
Probably you do, because honestly, we asked this question the last time that we talked about the last time we talked about A Custard Protocol book. When we talked about Prudence, we asked this question, but just to each other. We didn't ask it to everyone.
Yeah.
And also, we included, you know, a soul stealer in that one.
Yeah.
But my answer is still the same. It's still vampire. I would still love to have a vampire parent. I mean, they could maybe transform me into a vampire.
It's not that easy, though, in this universe.
No, it's really not. It'd have to be my vampire mother to do it. It's got to be the queen.
It's got to be the queen.
Yeah.
Well, lioness, though, might be a bit easier. It's not an option.
Could be. What about were monkeys? Do we know how that works?
No. But with werelions, it's the male has the turning bite, but it's easier to turn females.
Yeah.
We need Percy to write this book.
Yeah, we do. Get on it.
So, we had a special poll on social media, didn't we?
We did. We asked another question on social media, mostly just to the Parasol Protectorate fan group. So good. Because they know.
They do.
Because they've read the books and they know.
Yeah. Context is key.
So, would you rather see Connell in his leather apron and his sooty spots only? Or would you rather see Percy in his striped bathing suit and top hat? Oh. We only asked this one on Facebook and Twitter. I didn't post it on Instagram this time. But 61% would prefer to see Connell. 39% would prefer to see Percy.
And on Twitter, so that's at Fictional Hangover, no, we are. We had an amazing 80 votes.
That is amazing.
Yeah, and it was split right down the middle, 50-50.
Really? Yeah. I am shocked by that.
Yeah.
I am shocked by that.
Yeah.
So we had some good comments for this one, too.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Gale herself said on Facebook she would rather see both of them, which basically nullifies everyone else's comment.
Yeah. So Twitter was right.
Twitter was right. Both of them. Exactly, perfectly down the middle, both of them.
Anya on Facebook says, Connell, of course, Percy is more attractive in his library than being a total goof in striped swimwear. I think it was always meant to be more bizarre than sexy. But to each their own, I guess. Fair enough.
I mean, Percy is very handsome.
Yeah, but...
And seeing him in his swimwear could...
I get a nerd, goofy, sexy vibe from the swimsuit top hat.
Yeah. Well, LaToya says, I like a ginger, and I'd be curious to confirm if all that navigating resulted in some bodily definition. I don't know if it does.
If you've got to take some strength to steer that wheel.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, so which one do you pick?
Oh, again, I forgot you were going to ask me.
I know.
I'm going to say Percy.
Really?
Mm.
Is it like a sexual, like, coming up slowly out of the water sort of thing, and he's dripping with his bathing suit? And
it's like Mr. Darcy from Pride and Prejudice, Colin Firth version, when he comes out of the lake. Hold on, I'm just going to go to a happy place.
Just drift off.
Okay, I'm back in the room.
Okay. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks. I'm going to go with Percy because I love a goofy nerd.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, he might let me go into his library afterwards.
It's true.
Bitches love books.
Oh. But he does not love fornicating in his library.
I'm not going to do that in his library. I've got some respect for the written word. Jeez. This is not amateur hour.
No, it's not. I have to say that I would go with Connell because I just like Connell so much. So shocking to say Connell, but I just like Connell so much. I also really like his mother. Like, I like them.
I like them, but not like them to that aggressive.
No?
No.
Okay. It's okay.
It's fine.
Yeah. I do like Percy in his library, though, but, you know, maybe ask this question again after we finish the series. Then we'll see. Because you know who's on the cover of Reticence. It's Percy.
He's not very ginger on that, though, is he?
A little bit.
A little bit. It's like Strawberry Blonde.
Yeah.
I don't get a massive, like, strong ginger vibe from him that it seems some of the commenters did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. So, we have some other questions.
Would you rather be a Deckling or a Sooty?
Okay, my answer unfairly goes back to finishing school.
I thought it might.
Yeah. I got a thing for our Sooty friends, especially for soap. So I think I'd rather be a Sooty. Also, you know, being a Deckling, like, who's the guy? Who's the one up at the top? Nips. I don't want to be Nips dangling upside down. I love that his name was Nips. And she's like, that's an unfortunate name. But then just goes right along with it. Nips, what are you doing up there? I have my fear of heights. So I don't want to be dangling about up top. I'll be down below in this with the cities.
And Aggie,
yeah.
Suppose if you but do.
Maybe
Canals
maybe
down
if you're
there.
With her more. And Canals down there too. And like maybe if you're with Aggie more, you'll get to see that maybe there's a reason
she grows
her
on
bad
you.
Attitude. I don't know.
Do you think Aggie grows on you like mold?
Probably. I don't know if that's good. I don't know. So what about you? A Deckling or a Sooty?
I want to say Deckling. Because I would love...
Because you like Nips.
I love Spoo. Yes, Lady Captain. I do
love Spoo.
I love Spoo. But Spoo's so special. However, I don't have a fear of height. However, crawling around on the top of the balloon fixing repairs would freak me out. But I would like, you know... I think I would like that. You know, you've got the fresh air. And I don't know. I just think the Decklings seem a little bit more enticing as an occupation than less claustrophobic.
Okay.
Speaking of Spoo, Lady Captain. Would you rather have a Gatling gun or a were-lion in a fight?
I mean, I love the idea of the Gatling gun, but it doesn't have as good a range as a werelion does. And the werelion can be all over the place, back and forth. So I'm gonna go with werelion just for ease of access.
Are we talking about the fight is taking place on a dirigible?
I guess so.
Well, we're gonna put it in context because if you just like if you're in a field, I'm gonna say a Gatling gun.
Yeah,
but in a fight on dirigible, I'm gonna say werelion. Yeah, tooth and claw, more nimble. Yeah. You know, less risk of hitting the air balloon and falling to your death.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go with that.
All right. What about our last question?
Would you rather? Oh dear me. Would you rather argue with Aggie or Alexia? I would go with Alexia.
Yeah? I was going to ask, does Aggie have anything she could bludgeon me with? Because Alexia does.
A fist?
Oh, yeah. And she's
I think she
she's
would get
quite
physical.
Beefy.
I would rather argue with Alexia. Alexia is more logical. And she would present her argument. She would do the pros, the cons, the fours, and you would be able to understand where she's coming from. Whereas I think Aggie would just shout at me and I'll be like, shut up, woman.
Yeah, you're probably right.
But I don't
maybe
want to
you could put,
at.
Maybe you could try to put Aggie in her place. And that would be good.
If you could. Achieve that, I think you would be given a stud.
I think so.
To go along with your memorial after she's beaten the snot out of you.
just get that on there too.
It's
posthumously awarded.
Nobel
because she's
peace.
Murdered you and thrown you into the boiler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you just one day, you just everybody would be like, where's so-and-so? And you're like, do you know? Last time I saw, she was in the boiler room, standing next to the boiler.
Now she's gone. But you could also maybe, you know, chuck Aggie in there. She's big, but you could probably get her in there if you confused her.
I don't think I could take her.
Probably not. I just don't want to fight with... I don't want to have an argument with Alexia because it's just too...
No, I'll have a debate with Alexia and I'll have a run away from Aggie.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I just feel like you would lose either argument.
Oh, yeah. But at least I would feel better about losing against Alexia than I would about Aggie.
Yeah. I feel like you'd be educated in the end of your argument with Alexia.
Yeah.
Your argument with Aggie, you'd just be angry at the end of it.
Yeah, you're more likely to be able to sit down and have a nice cup of tea with Alexia afterwards than,
yeah,
you know, like I say, end up in the boiler if you were.
Yeah. Oh, those are good questions this time. Oh,
it was nice and light, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah. I don't feel like it's made any deep, dark insights in my psyche.
No, we didn't eat anyone this
time. Nothing was inappropriate.
No, it's fine. All of it's fine. So that was the end. That was the end of Would You Rather.
Oh.
And now, you know what it's time for. Final thoughts. What are your final thoughts?
I have three.
Okay.
And I actually wrote these down as the audiobook, which I haven't said, and surprisingly how amazing Moira Quirk's audiobook continues to be.
Yeah. We did talk quite a bit about her narration the first time around. So maybe everyone still remembers that. But yeah, we do love her voice acting, her narration. She's top notch.
She really is. So as I was listening to it, I made a couple of notes just because I liked these bits that stood out.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one is, people are like hollandaise sauce. That's what Dharma says to Rue. Sometimes they can split. So the way I took that was, it's okay to not be okay, which I think is quite a poignant thing. And then on the flip side, good cooks are hard to come by, especially ones who are pastry, so take care of yours. And if you're in for a boil, you might as well steam.
So all very good quotes from the book.
I absolutely adored them.
But yeah, they're very good. I love all of them.
What about you? Did anything in your final thought?
Well,
any lessons?
Yeah, I've got one.
Yeah.
I've got one. And the first one, it's kind of a quote. I mean, Prim says it to Rue. She tells her not to discount her worth. And I think that's true.
Yeah.
Don't discount your worth. Don't any of it. Anything that you're worth, don't. You're better than you think you are. And then there's a quote. I think we seldom regret the risks we take as much as the times we did not try at all. That's from Flute.
He's a wise man.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mm. Although what they were talking about at the time is a little silly. Yeah, he says that to Rue when they're talking about Kanel and Anitra. Yeah. Rue, bless her, thinks that like Kanel is infatuated with Anitra. And Anitra she's like, I'm not wearing any jewelry. I'm not actively seeking an engagement here. So you don't have to worry about me. And she's like, oh, I don't even, come on. Everyone sees that you are in love with Kanel, Rue. So just do it. Just be in love with him and be okay with it. And then they are by the end.
Yeah.
So that's good. But that was a good Flute quote.
It's an excellent Flute quote. And I'm glad Formerly Flute will be sticking around a bit.
Yep. He'll be with us for a little bit longer. As long as a ghost lasts until you go poltergeist.
Yeah, but he's in the preservation tank, so it'll last a bit longer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Haunting the ship.
Haunting the ship. Precisely. Right. Now we need a little bit of a fanfare. What have you got for us this time?
Ooh, well, this time I wanted to go a little bit more into hardcore steampunk.
Okay.
I think Miss Gill is a fantastic, she was my gateway, but I wanted to go a little bit deeper and a little bit more hardcore. So the first one is actually a recommendation from my dearest beloved husband, Colin.
Oh, thanks, Colin.
We were talking about it. And it is Bone Shaker by Sherry Priest. And it's a series called The Clockwork Century. Bone Shaker is the first book.
Okay, tell me about it.
The synopsis is, the overview, at the start of the American Civil War, gold brought hordes of people, Russian prospectors commissioned by Dr. Leviticus Blue to create a machine to mine through Alaska's ice. The incredible bone-shaking drill engine was born. The Bone Shaker goes awry, destroying downtown Seattle, unearthing a subterranean vein of blight gas. Anyone who has breathed it as fumes turns into the living dead.
It's set in Seattle!
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I also like to pick it, because, there you go.
I need to read it.
Just for you. So that one is recommended by Colin, and he really, really enjoyed it, and it is a bit more of a hardcore, hard steampunk series. The second one is The Greyfriar is the first book of the Vampire Empire trilogy. Hmm. And the audiobook, and I've only listened to it via audio, and it's narrated by James Masters, Spike from Buffy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've ever listened to any of his narrations. He is sublime.
I bet. I haven't, but I bet. He's fantastic.
Amazing. I will also recommend, just based on his narration alone, Butcher's Dresden Files. The books are amazing.
Yeah.
But James Masters also does the narration, and it is bliss in my ears. Anyways. So this book is The Greyfriar, and by a duo, Claire Griffin and Susan Griffin. And it's just fantastic. I absolutely love it. It's a bit of a mix of pulp action and steampunk, and it's set in the 1870s. There's a plague of vampires, so the vampires aren't really that nice in this one, have swept over the northern regions of the world. And then it jumps to 2020, and Princess Adele in Empire, she's the heir to the Empire of the of Equatoria, which is actually, it's kind of like a remnant of the British Empire, but she's in hot country, so you kind of get like a Morocco, Africa kind of feel from it. And she becomes the target of a vampire clan, and she's kidnapped while she's actually travelling over old Europe. The Greyfriar is her protector, and he's named after Greyfriars Kirkyard in Edinburgh, and he is based in Edinburgh. And he's a mysterious hero from within the territory, and there are twists, and there are turns, there are airships, there are clockwork devices. And they travel all over Britain, and they are in Edinburgh in some of it, in one of the books. And I've been to Edinburgh, and I love that city. It's a beautiful city. And I know exactly where every single place is there, because it's just so well done. It's beautiful. You know, when you know the set, like Bone Shaker set in Seattle, if it mentions places that you've been to, and you're like, I don't get that vibe, that's not what the city's like.
Yeah.
This picks up the different countries, and it picks up the different cities. Ooh. And it's beautiful. And as an audiobook series, I cannot recommend it enough. It's absolutely awesome. Amazing. So yes, The Greyfriar by Claire Griffin and Susan Griffin, and Bone Shaker by Sherry Priest. Not light listens, but they are both very good examples of a harder steampunk.
Well, I need to read those, both of them then. Okay, that's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover.
Aww.
I'm Amanda. I know. Oh, yeah, this episode's over. Oh, can I just say something about today? And we didn't even talk about it. Today's my birthday. This is a good episode to release on my birthday.
Happy birthday.
No. Only if there are sexual steampunk sexcapades can you sing that song. Are you wearing a leather apron?
Yes. No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We didn't even talk about it.
No. Happy birthday.
Hooray. It's birthday. It's my birthday. Hooray. Okay. Now, don't forget about that contest that we have going from last week's episode with our terrible poll to earn a signed copy of Teeth in the Mist by Dawn Kurtigage. Today is your last day to answer that question. So be sure to choose wisely and make a hilarious comment about it. We will announce our winners tomorrow on social media.
And we won't judge you by the answers that you've.
But actually, we will. We are judging them specifically on what they say.
We're judging the content, not the character.
Not the character. Not your character.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, we love you guys.
We do. We love you so much. Thanks for playing. Where were we? Oh, yeah, that's the end. That's the end of this episode. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire.
Join us next time as we discuss the first three books of the House of Night series, Marked, Betrayed, and Chosen by PC Cast and Kristen Cast. If you have anything to share with us about anything we've discussed so far or any questions about what's coming up, let us know. Also, be sure to look out for our next Would You Rather poll on social media. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
You can find us at fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover, and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. Also, a special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and Patreon. Thanks for listening.